This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
The shoes are so important.
John Hogue built his career in the event and entertainment industry, capturing some of the biggest names in music over the last 15 years. During the pandemic, he pivoted to a more family-friendly role as the Director of Marketing Communications at OWC. Although his role is focused on helping teams get the right equipment from his time and experience in the field, he still finds ways to scratch his creative itch in the process. This conversation is more than cables, drives, and shared storage. It's about the need for speed and focusing on your story. All right, Darius, you want to call the time that is?
Yeah, I'm on time that is. Let's go with 24. My phone almost fell off the disc.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today. All right, excited to have John Hogue here with us today, Director of Marketing Communications from OWC. We're going to get into production and all of your equipment needs and wants, and what is coming down the pipe that everyone should be excited about as well. So, John, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So, we'd always love by starting hearing about how you got into the industry, what your background is, and learning a little bit more about you, aside from the great work that you do as well. So I would love to hear a little bit about how you got into the event and photography industry and how you got started.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, a long, long time ago, was working in the music industry in recording studios, found myself as a stage manager for bands, touring, and then eventually, after a series of unfortunate events, found my way into the film industry, but, you know, love to follow the winding path that is life, and worked in production for a long time and spent some time working with AD departments on major features in New York. That led me back to the live entertainment industry. And I had picked up a camera along the way, started making some images and shooting on the weekends, and was friends with some bands from my previous life and was their touring photographer and videographer for a number of world tours for some artists in the pop punk and rock and roll space. And after COVID happened, the live industry sort of dried up and I found my way towards OWC. There was a position that was needed to be filled for a creative content lead. And I had sort of, I feel like the perfect skill set to speak to all the audiences, from audio to film to photography. And these products and solutions that we make here at OWC are, you know, tools that every single creator can find some benefit from and, you know, improve their workflow and improve their life effectively, not to get too grand with it. But it was a good fit. And here we are a couple of years later. Talking to all the industries and trying to get the best solutions in the market in the creators' hands.
Yeah. So how did you start or decide that you wanted to get into events or into the music industry coming up through high school? And what was your intention when you went to school and graduated? What were you thinking you were going to do with your life early on?
Well, I went to school for business management, which, you know, I guess is applicable to everything. You do need to manage a business no matter what you're doing. But my sort of track was leading towards like a job in finance or, you know, the stock market or something like that. And I just sort of realized that I didn't want to do that. And I always had a love for live entertainment. You know, I'd gone to a lot of concerts in high school, the behind the scenes of things were starting to come out when I was in high school. So I was seeing stuff on MTV that was like, you know, the look into the life of touring artists and things like that. And I always thought that was really cool. I did a small stint, actually, this is like sort of a tangent, but a small stint as a stagehand at the local venues, and seeing the way, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but like when a concert comes to town and it takes over your local arena or stadium, everything comes with that group. So you go into what was a hockey rink the night before, and it becomes a stage, and all the speakers get hung and the lights, and everything comes with the group that's on tour. And I just found that to be utterly amazing. And I was like fascinated with the touring industry. And I was like, I have to be a part of this life. So I was always taking photos, always loving music, and had people in that industry that led me to that. And, you know, then the creating images and sort of documenting it became the most important part of it for me. I just thought that what people were doing, and social media was on the rise at that point, and it was like people wanted to see what was happening on the days off more than just like what was on stage. So it was a really good sort of perfect storm of events to get into that.
That's awesome. One question I like to always ask is, you know, at what age did you start getting the creative bug? Like that you wanted to create images, whether that's video or photo or whatever. Like how early, what's your earliest memory of being a creative?
I would say that like probably around 15 or 16, I was in high school, friends were in bands, and cameras started becoming available, like Panasonic DVX 100s and things like that. And like the late 90s, early 2000s, kind of like skate cams. And a couple of friends and I got our hands on one of them after pooling some resources. And we started making short films in our living rooms. And, you know, those bands needed music videos. So we were like, we're the guy for that, you know, who was just like grabbing the camera and making what was necessary to sort of continue the vision. So I'd say like middle of high school started opening up those worlds to me like this. Not necessarily that it could be a job, but it was certainly something that was like exciting and fun to do.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, you went to college for business. At what point did you realize that this could be a long-term like career?
I think once the paychecks started coming in, even if they were small, like the fact that I could start start charging for folks, you know, like for the services that I was providing, like realizing that what I was doing had value and could assign a dollar amount to it, you know, I was like, oh, this can be a job. You know, entertainment is a business. And I don't think you think of it that way. Maybe now I do. But I think when you're younger, you see performance or sports, and you know, sports always has a money component tied to it. But sort of like the touring industry, which is where I was at that point, is not necessarily thought of as a job. You know, it wasn't the path. But I was seeing that the camera led to you know, I could charge $50 for a photo shoot, and that was cool. And then I was like, well, maybe that's not enough money because these cameras are expensive. So starting to see that you could charge for the services was the moment where I was like, oh, this could, I can do this. I'm sure of it.
Did you have any moments of failure early on, like with things breaking? Or I can only imagine, like, in the live event world, so much stuff goes wrong and the show still has to go on. So I'm wondering if you have any good stories about anything along those lines.
I have one good story, and it's not necessarily towards camera equipment, but I think there's something to be pulled from it generally in terms of like having a good clean workspace and having a process in place. I was stage managing for a band, and the singer came over to me. We're at a small venue in Indianapolis, but there was like 1,000 people in the crowd, and her wireless microphone died. So A, it was my responsibility to change the batteries before the show, which I guess I put in, they were rechargeable batteries, but I put in ones that weren't fully charged. So learning moment number one, and then learning moment number two, she gives me the mic off to the side of the stage. I take the batteries out and I have new batteries and I drop all of them on the floor. So now they're all looking the same. And I'm like, I don't know which ones are the charged ones and which ones are the live ones. And she's got to go back out on stage and sing this song. So I grabbed 4 of the 8 batteries on the floor with best guesses and best intentions and put them in, and it worked. thankfully got us through the rest of the show. But it was definitely a learning moment where I was like, I need a bin that says live batteries, dead batteries. And I got to keep them clean and keep that stuff organized. So if this does happen, you're prepared. And I think that's like sort of, like I said, a good, you know, learning moment for just like, keep your workspace clean, keep your stuff prepared, keep it organized, pack your bag the right way, you know, get your world in order, and you will perform better when it's showtime.
What are some of those like memorable moments, like good ones? Like, what's a show that, like, if somebody asks you, like, hey, how was traveling and covering music concerts and venues and all that? Like, what's a concert that stands out for you, or a music show?
Yeah, for me, one of the bands I toured with did Madison Square Garden. It was their first time, and I had gone there a number of times as a concert attendee. And to be backstage and on stage, actually, with this band, like taking photos at Madison Square Garden, which was my childhood venue, effectively, was pretty epic. I mean, as venues go, that's one of the biggest in the world. And, you know, I think they actually call themselves the world's greatest arena. And I know you're from Boston, Justin, so I think you'll probably maybe disagree, but, it's an iconic venue for sure. And, it was pretty special to see that ceiling and like to be taking a picture and have these like thousands of fans screaming for the band I was documenting and, being on a stage. You know, I wasn't performing, but I was there and I got to feel the energy and the electricity of it. Pretty special moment for sure.
Yeah, you have a number of bands that I think a lot of people would recognize. Train, Panic at the Disco. You were a key PA for Justin Bieber. Are there any like personal stories or anything that you have? We're all people, right? Athletes are people too, and I think sometimes when we get into it, we forget, and we, you know, everything just gets, you know, their celebrity or whatever just kind of gets in the way. Are there any human to human stories of how, you know, behind the scenes that you have from any of those bands that you worked with?
Yeah. I mean, there's countless stories for sure. I mean, trying to think of some specifics. I mean, you know, Panic at the Disco is one that you brought up, and they're actually doing this weekend. I don't know when this will come out, but in October 2025, they're doing the When We Were Young Fest again, and they're sort of dusting off their shoes and doing another concert again for the first time in a while. But Brendan Urie, the singer of that band, was just absolutely a raw talent, and just incredible to watch him every single night get out and put his heart and soul onto the stage and actually give what I would call an athletic performance. I mean, backflips and jumping off drum sets and singing at the top of his lungs and hitting notes that you didn't think were possible consistently night after night. Pure class. And then to just take care of his crew and his band and every single person on the tour. It was just that was just like, you're like, this is when you reach a pinnacle of success, this is how you're supposed to do it, you know?
So, when we're all around the same age, give or take a few years or whatever. When you were growing up, what were some of the inspirations, like people? Like, I know for me, like growing up in the 90s and having once aspired to be on SportsCenter and ESPN, Stuart Scott was my guy, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing Dan Patrick and all these guys. Like, we had MTV, we had VH1, we had other music, you know, BET, whatever people were watching, and the music channels if you had DirecTV. Where did you find inspiration during those days? I mean, now people can just go to YouTube, they can go to Instagram or TikTok. Where did you find your early inspiration from?
It was the early days of inspiration were definitely live concerts for sure. I was big into sports in high school. Michael Jordan was a big inspiration, just sort of from like a work ethic point of view. And I guess there's nothing particularly interesting about that because he's inspired an entire generation. But he was a killer, and it was amazing to watch. And you were just like, this is how you put it all, leave it all on the court. Magazines were big actually back then. It's a sort of an industry that was powerful, like a lot of guitar magazines and things like that. And then, you know, watching films, buying DVDs, and the video store was a place for me that I found a lot of inspiration. But MTV also, I've talked about it already, but it was, you know, seeing those music video directors and what they were doing with the medium and how they were sort of turning a song into a story and a visual was really, really fascinating for me. Directors like Michel Gondry and photographers like Mark Seliger, some legends in the world. And you were like, this is, it tells so much more of the story when you can put a visual to it. So I love that.
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to my sister and she reminded me a couple of days ago how you used to be able to rent like VHS tapes and watch concerts and all of that. And that kind of took me, because you're like, hey, you're renting DVDs or buying DVDs. Now it's so much more accessible that you can just go almost, you know, anywhere and find what you're looking for to be inspired, to learn and all that. So that is pretty neat.
Yeah, I feel like with streaming and the ease of use with things like YouTube and things like that, it's almost harder to find your lane, I wonder. I don't know. This is like a concept I'm, you know, just creating on the fly here. But, you know, you used to know what you liked because you had to go search for it. And maybe, you know, now there's just so much at everyone's fingertips. You're like, I like everything. And that's cool. That's great. But there's like, I feel like, back in my day, to sound like an old man, it was like you had to pick a lane because you had to, you know, could buy one CD a month, you know, or something like that. And it was like I couldn't listen to every song on the planet, so I was like, I had to pick. I either like this or I hate this, but I'm stuck with it, so I'll have to figure something out about it that I enjoy.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I had a buddy that actually mentioned this because he's a financial advisor, and he was like, we're not meant to take in all of this information at once and just have it like access all of it because it confuses you. And so, like you said, maybe that was a positive, you know, that we had to go and search, like, it's like encyclopedias, right? Like we're all old enough to where you used to have to go to a library and, you know, check out an encyclopedia or, you know, go through a few of them to get to research. And so you had to put more work in there and into doing what you're doing. Justin, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's what AI is now, right?
Yeah.
Everyone just asks AI for the answer. I mean, my kids talk to our Google speaker all the time asking it questions. So in some regards, I think it's cool, but other sides, there's definitely some darker sides to it.
Yeah. But do you think it's harder to like kind of figure out what you want to do? Because I think John brings up a good point. It's like now there's so much, it's harder to figure out like the pinpoint exactly. Like it's a good and bad thing. It's like, oh, you go in the grocery store now and now that you have money when you're a kid, it's like, hey, you can pick one thing, right? But now that, you know, you're the adult and you get to decide, it's like you have all of these options and it's almost like option overload.
Oh yeah, there's so much more that overwhelms you. It's like, you don't want to start, you know?
That part.
That's a big thing too. You're like, I got to get it perfect before I get going. And nothing will ever be perfect. It's time to start and just pick a lane and go.
Yeah, for sure.
So you had the fortune or misfortune, depends on how a person's perspective is, right? Of transitioning from touring and you know, doing music to a pretty much desk job that some people may see. What was that transition like for you? I know, you know, with the economy where it is now, a lot of people are still job searching and, you know, trying to find their way. What was that transition like for you? Like, what was that experience?
You know, at the moment, it was hard. It was hard to sort of, you know, swallow that like the previous life was over, but looking back on it, it was time. You know, I was getting older, I was gone 9 months a year basically, so that was great when I was young and single and had very few responsibilities. But as I had gotten married and thought about starting a family, that's not unsustainable. A lot of people do it, but for me, it wasn't the right fit. So I looked at it as a blessing that I could sort of settle down, and I still get to be creative here at OWC, you know, where we run the social media accounts and we're trying to find fun ways to make, you know, storage products interesting and share great stories of people that are using our products. And go out and we just released a case study with a filmmaker called Ty Evans. He's a skate photographer, filmmaker by trade, and now he's into he's a director of aerial production at a company called Helinet, and he's flying stabilized cameras on helicopters. And you know, we get to go tell those stories. So I went to the hangar with him and did some interviews and saw the helicopters and saw the camera system. So as it feels like you're getting something taken away from you, you know, like anything in life, if you look at it through the right rose colored glasses, there's always, you know, a better version of it on the other side. So I'm happy where I am. And it took a little bit of, you know, talk therapy and meditation to get through it and be like, all right, we're going to make peace with this, but we're here on the other side of it. And it's okay. It's, you still get to do cool stuff as long as you try.
Absolutely. And one of the things that, you know, there are a lot of people who are possibly dealing with transition, right? Figuring out whether you're like, I went from sports to non-sports, right? And it was a learning curve of how do I transfer what I, you know what you're good at, but it's like translating it in a way to make it work. What were some of the transferable things going from, you know, being on the road, capturing photo, video, to now, you know, having to curate stories in a different vertical, in a sense? Like, what were some of those skills that you had to learn how to, you know, hey, I got this in my bag. I got this in my bag, and produce.
Yeah, I think it's all about people all the time. You know, and it's what people want, and it's, you know, I think it's beating a dead horse, but it's storytelling. So, you know, if we talk about a product from just its specs, it's pretty dry and pretty boring, and we do need to have that stuff. And it's important to have that on product pages and things like that, because there are people that want to learn that. But I think if you lead with story, that is absolutely sort of always going to win, no matter what industry you're talking about, whether it's finance, if you talk about return rates and, you know, compound interest, people's eyes are going to glaze over. But if you talk about, the way someone can retire, or if they can, you know, go on vacation, that makes finance a lot more interesting. So if you talk about hard drives in megabytes per second, some people are going to be okay with that. But if you talk about it in, you can make your feature film with this product, or you can go to dinner because they offload faster, that makes external storage products a lot more interesting. So I always lead with story and sort of trying to connect the human element. That's, I think, you know, I would say a strong suit. Is thinking people first and not product first.
It's interesting because my initial thought is, yeah, you're selling to the customer, right? The creator, the user, and then the creator user needs to go to finance to get it, to get the budget to do it, right? So I'm like putting your business hat, your major on. How can we be better about highlighting? Yes, it's not about necessarily about the megabytes, but we can build, or we can use this, the story that you're telling to help sell the product through to the CFO or whatever. How can we be better about as creatives with the business side when it comes to budgeting and some of those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that storytelling aspect of it. It's definitely sort of connecting the human element to the money element. I often say, like, you know, if you're on a film production, right, and there's a camera truck that's sitting there that's waiting to be loaded, it's the last thing to go out the door, and everybody that's involved with that truck is getting paid overtime past a certain point. And if you can shorten the amount of time that your DIT needs to offload files to a drive, that gets that camera truck and 12 people off the clock an hour earlier, because you spent $300 more on a hard drive at the beginning of the production, you just saved yourself $1,000. So it's like trying to draw these parallels between like investments in good products leads to a better work environment, less overtime if you're talking to a producer who's just driven by an Excel sheet. And then also, you know, you have happier people, they're getting home safer, they're not driving tired, you know, like there's so many story elements that connect to one piece of gear that can, you know, that can improve the lives of others and also save money on in the long run.
All right, we're going to geek out for a second, right? Because OWC has been around for nearly 40 years, right?
That's right.
And you guys sell products for like the regular person, the creative with an agency, like all different, you know, sizes, memory, hard drives, everything. To kind of touch on what Justin was saying, is like, how do you help a person decide what they need for, whether it's the now or the future? Like for me, I'm going to admit that I have like 40 different hard drives, and probably shouldn't have 40 different ones. Maybe it's a couple of different options. So how do you and OWC kind of help the customer, whether it's a one person show or an agency, decide what is the best solution for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tailored to every sort of situation. So I can't give a blanket answer there, but I do definitely think it's important to set your goals, you know, and try to hit them. So something like you're talking about, having a bunch of separate drives in a shoebox or a plastic crate, I suffer from the same thing. So nobody's perfect, don't get me wrong. But the reality is that if I would have had a plan a little bit earlier in my career, it would all be on one desktop RAID, which is actually a project that I'm trying to do right now. Take all of my SSDs from my years of touring and creating and put them on one drive. I don't know if I'll need them, but if someone comes and reaches out to me and says, hey, I need the footage from this show because X, Y, and Z happened, it's going to take me a long time to dig through all those SSDs and plug them in, make sure I have the cable, see if it still works. So if you care about your work, my biggest recommendation, I would say, at least in storage, is try to keep it current and keep it consolidated into one or two sort of master places, because it will make your life easier later in life. I spoke with a music producer who was doing a 20-year sort of re-release remaster of an album, and the label reached out to him and they were like, hey, do you have the original sessions? And that's 20 years later. He did have the sessions, but it took him a week and a half to find it. And he had to go through all this trouble to sort of find the right cable for the drive and reconnect it, open up an old computer to make it work. And it's like, if he would have just moved that session to one sort of desktop RAID, it would have been a lot easier, because you just have to dig through the file structure. So it's, I think, planning for the future and, you know, pushing yourself to be a little bit better than you think you are is kind of a good one, because you can go to the store and buy the cheapest off the shelf drive, and it'll get you through more often than not. But if you're taking this seriously and you're making it your career and your livelihood depends on it, you know, invest in the good stuff. It's like the better tires do, they cost more for a reason type of thing for your race car, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just for people who may not understand what a RAID is, do you want to dive into why a RAID is better than just a standard off-the-shelf external hard drive that you maybe travel with, but then when you come back and, you know, put your contents on a RAID, what are the benefits of RAID?
Yeah, absolutely. So a RAID it stands for a redundant array of independent disks. So it's multiple disk drives in one enclosure that through software or hardware, you create one volume. So you get, you know, let's say you have four 10 terabyte hard drives in one enclosure, that would be a 40 terabyte RAID, and capacity can change based on how you set it up. But it's making a really big hard drive effectively. And RAID, because it's a redundant array, that first letter protects against drive failure. So if you have four drives in your RAID, one of them fails, you pull one out, you replace it, and it can pull the data, assuming you've set this up properly on the front end, which is not that hard, but it can pull the data from all the other drives and rebuild the volume completely. So if you have a drive failure, RAID protects against drive failure. So it makes a big volume, which is nice because you can consolidate. So 40 terabytes is a lot easier to put a lot of stuff on than a 2 terabyte drive. And also it has redundancy if there is a drive failure.
Perfect for all of us hoarders out there.
100%.
I think every single content creative, well, I could use this someday.
You know? Exactly. What if I need that? You know, you don't want to get rid of it. I'm guilty of it. I think, like you said, we all are. And, you know, there's a time and a place to delete stuff, but who's going out there like deleting files forever? Like something you shot that you created and you're like, I wish I can't do that. I can't do it.
Only certain stuff. And that was going to lead to my next question is like, when you talk storage, and some people might not think that that's a, you know, attractive part of the industry, but you do have to keep, you know, stuff, whether it's for you, whether it's for, I mean, we don't have to get in the weeds about like when you're freelancing or whatever and like hoarding footage for someone else that you'll never use yourself. Like, what should we as creatives kind of, you know, you kind of touched on a little bit, like how should we be prioritizing when we're talking storage? Like, should we, you know, now that there's cloud, you got, you know, Google Drive, you got Dropbox, you got all of these different cloud solutions that some can afford, some can't. How would you recommend prioritizing what you keep and what you kind of put somewhere else?
I think, and don't, you know, nobody come yelling at me if you do this and it doesn't work out exactly the way it should, but I think you should have your raw data in your possession. And I think the reality of cloud costs right now is like you should be uploading smaller versions, proxies, or finished projects to the cloud. And you should have it in multiple locations. I mean, we do recommend, and it's an industry standard, sort of the 3-2-1 backup rule. It's 3 copies of the media, 2 in one place and 1 in a remote location. So, you know, you want to have multiple copies. If it's important, you want to have multiple copies in multiple locations. And the cloud definitely falls into that as well. But, you know, cloud gets expensive. So you don't want to put your entire life on there, especially once it gets into the, you know, 100 terabyte range or something like that. It's not going to be sustainable. So a desktop solution that you can keep in your place, and then a less expensive, less performant one that you can keep at your grandma's house in the basement, you know, in case there's a flood or something, and then put some finished projects and important files up on the cloud for easy access. And, you know, as a last resort is kind of the way I look at it.
So for the hoarders in the building, would you, so let's say that you, as a creative, buy a RAID or, you know, something that is stationary that you, so would you go tier 1, get a RAID, then get you a SSD to kind of travel with if you're traveling, and then cloud, or would you rank those in different orders?
I would say for me, I mean, if you're traveling or if you're working in remote locations, if you're working in a studio, you can kind of go right to the RAID, but SSDs are portable. They're bus powered. It makes it easy. And they're large now. I mean, we make SSDs that are up to 8 terabytes, so you can fit a lot of stuff on an SSD. So I would do 1 SSD for the project drive, 2 the RAID, you come home, you offload to it, and then cloud is number 3. So I would go small, big, remote is the way I would rank it.
I love it. You got a question, Jess?
I was going to ask a little bit about specs. I know we talked a little bit about how, yeah, specs might be important to some people, but not others. Yep. What matters when you're looking for an SSD? Obviously, SSDs have become a lot more popular than where we started, when you used to have to plug it into the wall in order to even use an external drive. But what should people be looking at, and what's most important when they're evaluating which brand or speed or any of that is better for what they're trying to do?
Yeah, really important is megabytes per second. Basically, that's your read and write speed, and it's how fast the drive can access your media. So, you know, USB 3.2, which is the beginning of the USB-C cable, that's the oval-shaped connector that you see so often now on iPhones, etc. They have different speeds over that cable, but the USB 3.2 protocol is about 1,000 megabytes a second. And you're going to want to look for sustained speed as well, because a lot of drives can do really impressive burst speeds. But if you're transferring 400, 500 gigs of footage, those speeds drop off. So at the beginning, the first 10 gigabytes can go really fast and you're like, oh, this is great. And then as soon as you get into 10 to 400 gigabytes, it starts to go really slow. So you want to look for sustained speeds. read and write. And you also want to make sure that your drive is capable of handling the media you're working with. So if you're working with, you know, Sony product or a Red R3Ds, you know, it depends on the, every file has a different bit rate, it's called, and it's the amount of megabytes per second that's required to access it. And you want to make sure your drive and your cable are able to keep up with that bit rate. So if it's 200 megabytes a second, 250 megabytes a second, and you're stacking two clips times it by two, you want to have 400 megabytes a second of sustained read and write speed so you can access those files really easily. And I think one thing that I kind of touched on there is oftentimes a cable can be the bottleneck. So you can have a fast drive and then you're using the wrong cable that can't keep up. So the cable actually becomes the problem. And people are like, oh, I bought this drive and it's not working, but I'm using my iPhone charging cable to move the data. And it's like, that's just designed to deliver power to an iPhone, not move data. So you're actually handicapping your drive performance by using the wrong cable. So picking solutions that have high sustained write speeds capable enough for your workflow and making sure that you have the right cable for it. One sort of catch-all term that we talk about now, Thunderbolt 4, Thunderbolt 5 are Intel specs, but they're industry-wide. And if you use a Thunderbolt 4 cable or a Thunderbolt 5 cable at this point, you're pretty much good to go. You can charge your iPhone from there and you can move data at 6,000 megabytes a second if your drive and computer can handle it.
As a creative, how much, this is kind of a two-part question. How much did being a photographer, videographer help in your day-to-day now? And kind of looking back, what are some things that you've learned while being at OWC that you kind of wish that you knew while you were doing like while you were traveling as a creative?
So the first part of the question, I think some of this, it's really helped to be a creative and have done this because you can speak the language. I think that's really important, is you sort of know the struggles, and you know, and now I know, I think to some degree, how to solve them. And then looking back, I wish I would have known this stuff then. Like that's the biggest takeaway, is like, I wish I would have had a more organized plan, similar to that battery story I told earlier. It's like learning to be organized really early will only help you in the long run. And some people are more organized than others, but like try hard to be organized, like get that stuff in one place, name it right, put a date in your file structure, like silly little things that can save your butt 10 years later when you're looking for something. You know, name stuff really nicely, meta tag stuff if you can, like, you know, Madison Square Garden show, like if I had that on one drive and I could just type in to the search bar MSG and find it really quickly, that's a lot better than like scrolling through a whole bunch of numbers that's like A001. That's not it. Like that's going to take a week and you're going to get frustrated. So organize early. And that would be my number one piece of advice for any, you know, early stage creatives. It's like, pick a system, whatever works for you, but like do it over and over again and it'll say, you'll be happy you did that down the road.
It's like the temporary pain for the long-term gain kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. But that was always my challenge when I was doing the video and logging with the Celtics, as trying to get everybody on board to do it and be consistent with it. It pays off, but sometimes you don't see the payoff until you get to the end of the year hype video, mm-hmm. and you're wondering, you're like, where are the best shots from the season so far that you want to compile quickly and all of that. So, yeah,
exactly. That's a perfect example of it, where you're like, you're getting a lot of data. All of it matters. None of it matters until it does, you know, is kind of mm-hmm. what it is. It's like you have these special moments that you don't know what they're going to become. We spoke, Atiba Jefferson is a skate photographer and also does a lot of content for the Lakers, and he has these shots of LeBron like right out of high school, and he's like, these things didn't become, you know, valuable or important for 15 years because it was like, I didn't know, he just like seemed like a really good high school player, but like it could have been nothing, you know, but he kept a good track of it, kept all his files organized, and then when LeBron became who LeBron was, that's LeBron James, the basketball player, for anybody that has been living under a rock for the last 25 years. You know, he had these like fine wines in his wine cellar that were like these really important photos all of a sudden.
All right, we're going to pause a little bit to play a little short game. And what we'd like to do here, John, is we give each of our guests 30 seconds. We make up the rules on the fly. And so as a creative, you know, we all have something that we have to have, for whether that's when we're creating, you know, a music video or a photo gallery or, you know, editing photos or whatever. So as a creative, what are, we name as many things as possible that are must-haves for you to, like, create magic. So I got to find my, give you a little time to think about that while I pull up the timer here. All right, you ready?
I think so. I'm going to do my best.
Go.
All right, I'm going to go coffee, number one. Playlist that is sick and motivating for photo editing. Out in the streets when you're working, good shoes. Better have good shoes on. A point-and-shoot camera, something that's small, lightweight, not your phone. I think it's got to be a dedicated device. My AirPods, those are important. Fast drive. Number six, a pen and a paper. I like a notebook. I like to write stuff down.
That's a great list. Those are, the shoes are so important.
They really are.
The good shoes. I mean,
you don't want the dogs barking.
Yeah. And just, you know, it's underrated for sure.
We've talked a little bit about the drives, externals, and the RAIDs. What are you seeing, I guess, from a creative standpoint that has become more of a need now than it was, let's say, during the pandemic? Like, people started to really notice the need for storage and doing things properly, especially when a lot of people went remote. And being able to access the content from wherever they are and all that, cloud, what have you. Is there anything that you've seen, let's say, in the last like 2 to 3 years that a lot more people are gravitating towards to help with their workflow efficiencies?
One thing I've noticed, and I think it's really important and often overlooked, it's kind of an unsung hero, is a fast memory card. Memory cards have become bigger and faster because cameras have become a lot more capable. I mean, when you think of something like a Sony A1 that can shoot 120 frames per second, stills, you need a memory card that can keep up because you're going to hit that buffer really fast. And if you're trying to capture the moment LeBron James, the basketball player, slam dunks the ball, or if you're on a wildlife shoot and there's a, you know, a bird about to take off, whatever it is that you're capturing in those high burst modes, a fast memory card is so, so important because you don't want to get back to your computer when you offload it and be like, the one shot I wanted my camera locked up because my memory card couldn't keep up. And it's a small investment for a really big return. So that's something I would definitely put on the top of the list.
I think I have the name for the episode. And that's the need for speed, whether that's a memory card or a, and that's something that, you know, absolutely, like that's, I've run into that situation where I'm like, why is this taking? And sometimes you don't realize that, especially now that mostly everything is running on USB-C, that one may not be, you know, designed for that. It may be a DJI cable that is only built for, you know, 50 megs a second or something. But it's also like getting certain cards that we won't call out their names aren't built for high production. Like if you're getting a certain card, yeah, they're $15-$20 for a 32 gig card, but is it protected? Is it fast enough? Are you going to be able to capture like really fast? Can it handle video? You know, so whether it's, because we've talked about storage, but we also haven't talked about like even, you know, in your system, do you have enough memory? Do you have, you know, so when you're talking to customers or other creatives, like, what's kind of that message to, like, what's kind of a checklist? We kind of talked on it, but like, when it comes to like specs, like, what are, if I'm a up and coming photographer that wants to do what you did, because that's one of the main questions, that, hey, how do I do what you do? So as a aspiring photographer, what are some of those notes that you would give me kind of as a checklist to make sure that I'm investing in that and not just the camera?
Yeah, I think it's an end-to-end ecosystem. Like, you would never buy a race car and put, like, you know, regular pump gasoline in it, like if you had a high performance engine, you know. And I think it's a very similar sort of parallel there. So you wouldn't buy the best camera on the market and then put a slow memory card that's not going to be able to keep up with it, because you're not giving yourself the best shot to be the best creative. So make sure you're creating a gear package that can keep up with what you want to do. And that has all different sort of levels, you know, depending on if it's high speed stuff, or, you know, maybe you're shooting portraits and you really, maybe you don't need the highest speed camera in the world. You don't need that Sony A1 that can freeze time and, you know, but you want a nice image. So, you know, buy the kit that fits. Maybe we just found a tagline there, but it's got to be end to end ready to go, because you can find yourself at a bottleneck, and that's really frustrating. And removing bottlenecks is what we strive to do here at OWC, is like get the technology out of the way so you can just work. Because as soon as something happens, when you get a little spinny wheel on your computer, the file transfer is taking longer than you expected it to, you lose that creative flow, and then you get up and you go get a coffee, and then all of a sudden you're on Instagram, and it's like these like downstream effects of non-performing gear are really, really hard to measure, but I promise they hurt your creativity. So kit yourself out so you're in the, when you start to work, you don't stop until you're done, you know, just like make it easy.
Yeah. I think you just kind of alluded to another piece of one of the questions that Justin asked about translating the business side over too, is because like, if like, I remember when I worked at previous institutions, like trying to get the business office to understand, this is why we need to invest in not just the camera, not just the card, not just the hard drive, but also the protection plan. Because if we spend, you know, the A1 is like $6,000. We spend $6,000, you have a 1 year Sony protection. But what happens if an intern knocks it over, or a full-timer? Full-timers drop stuff too. But like making sure that you have all of the necessary pieces, and not just, you know, I've seen other people who are, oh yeah, we just need this, this, and that. Ask for it all up front. And, you know, then what can you cut off if you have to like meet a budget? But that's one of the things that I learned along the way, is you got to make sure that you're investing in every piece of it, whether that's filters, cards, batteries, chargers, you know, the right chargers, not just something off of Amazon. Like, I remember when I first started at Texas, like, my guy ordered a drone, but he ordered it from Amazon. And it was like a third party Amazon sale where, you know, they send you 400 accessories, but none of them are like good. And so the batteries started swelling, like that he ordered. And it's like, because we didn't like make the right investment. Like, yeah, you got all this stuff on the front end, but is it,
does it really benefit you in the long run? Yeah, probably not. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Do your research. And I think, you know, it's like not necessarily a conversation about insurance, but nobody wants to pay for insurance until you need it, you know? And it's like that. It's like pay for the, invest in good gear, it will pay off in the long run. Because I mean, even the, like, you know, you have a monitor on your camera, then like the little toggle thing that like holds it up, if it keeps flopping over, I've had this happen, that's why I'm like talking about it so passionately. It's like when you're shooting something and your monitor keeps falling over because the thing won't stay tight, that the bracket that keeps it up, and you're like, it's the most frustrating thing in the world, and you can't focus on your job because you didn't spend $19 instead of 12, you know what I mean? It's like,
right,
it's easy to make those decisions and go for the sort of bargain version, but in the long run, like the good stuff, it's it's more expensive for a reason, because it's well designed. And, you know, not saying everything and not to spend money just willy nilly. But, you know, good gear definitely makes a difference in a successful shoot and workflow.
Yeah. Do you have a camera and camera brand model that you like? Even I'm sure now that you're working at OWC, there's probably still times that you get a chance to, you know, dust the or do it on the side. Like, what's your go-to brand or model camera that you like to, you know, capture with?
So on my day-to-day, I use Blackmagic. That's what we have and what I like. I have a Leica Q2 that I shoot for my personal stuff. I really like that because, as I mentioned, I like to have a point and shoot that can come with me everywhere. And I really do love the Leica image. I know there's a lot of hype around that brand. But I love what Nikon and Red are doing with the ZR. I'm actually looking into purchasing one of those. I can't get brand agnostic because I think a lot of cameras make really cool stuff. A lot of camera brands make really cool stuff. And I don't like to subscribe to the, you know, like making a camera brand my identity thing. Sony makes beautiful images. And if you're capturing something cool and you have a character that is worth watching, any camera's going to do it. You know, I shoot a lot of pictures of my kid on my iPhone that are some of my favorite images, you know? So it's like, as long as you got something, you're in the right ballpark. But I mean, cameras are coming such a long way so quickly. I really like that ZR.
Yeah. Yeah. It really blew up the internet when that was announced, because it's the most surprising thing is the price point.
That's right. Like, yeah.
You can get that for, you know, you can get two of those for the price of an FX3.
Yeah.
So at OWC, you're the solutions person.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also, you get to, you know, kind of talk about being innovative, because like, just like cameras are changing, storage is changing, memory is changing, accessories are changing. How much have you seen change? I mean, you've been there almost, 5 years?
Yeah, 4 years just, now, yeah.
Just talk about the change that you've seen in like storage solutions and all the things that OWC offers over the course of your career to where you are now.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about when I got started in this, I was on like FireWire 400 drives, and they were writing at 50 megabytes a second. And now Thunderbolt 5 is on the market. We have external SSDs that write at 6,000 megabytes a second. And I've done the math on this. It's about 11,000% increase in speed. So as camera files got bigger, storage did need to keep up. And I mean, think about that, an 11,000% speed difference. It's wild. It's remarkable how fast this stuff moves right now. Terabytes in a blink of an eye. And I used to be able to buy drives. I would buy a, you know, 500 gigabyte drive for like $600. And I was like, this is all I'll ever need. And then I was buying two a year, and then I was buying four a year. And now everything starts at 1 terabyte. So speed has really jumped an incredible amount. And it's cool to see, because it gets people, you know, making more impressive images and working faster. So I would say that jump, you know, from the external storage is the most notable thing that I've seen.
All right. So one of the most important parts of the show is we like to give back, right? As you know, reach back. We've all been in the industry for a number of years, especially combined. Kind of a two-parter here. What is some advice that you wish that you had getting started? And what would be some advice that you would give to the younger generation of creatives who are coming up?
I think I'll go back to get organized early. I wish someone would have helped me out with a file structure system, or told me that was something that would be important. I learned that the hard way. And when I eventually got there, it made my life better. And looking back, you can see it in my files, like when things started to get organized. And I was like, that was, you know, that would have been helpful in the beginning. And then advice to younger generation, I would say, don't get caught up in the gear conversation. Go with what you got, get something, you need something, but go book a flight or go down to your local venue or your high school sports team and shoot and get access, go somewhere someone else hasn't been or you haven't been and try to tell a different story. Really look to telling stories more than, you know, getting caught up in the gear acquisition syndrome, because you can spend a lot of money and still tell boring stories. And that's, there's no worse crime in my opinion. Really pretty images and nothing behind it. So, and learn your gear also. I think making it second nature, especially in the industry of sports, anything live, anything that's happening fast that you can't control, you know, whether it's wedding photography, sports, wildlife, live music, learn your gear. So when the light changes or, you know, something unexpected happens, you're so capable of switching your ISO or your shutter speed without even looking. And, you know, you can keep moving without having to like break out the instruction manual. I think that's key. Having that stuff be second nature would be so, so important.
Love it. Well, awesome. John, this has been incredible. It's always awesome to get like on the techie side and kind of geek out when it comes to gear and stuff. So definitely appreciate you spending time with us to kind of, you know, give us some more insights on what we should be thinking as we're, you know, continuing to capture stuff. You know, like I said earlier, some people may delete stuff. Some people may be taking certain routes, but it is very important to get stable storage solutions, whether that's SSD, RAID, you know, if you can afford it, one of the big servers. You know, I'm going to charge one of those back to Justin so I can get a storage solution server.
Nice. Send the invoice. He'll take care of it. He said he would.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks.
Man. It's been
just put it on the reserve business card, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything we missed before we cut the record?
There was one. So recently I'm an avid golfer and okay. I got a phone call from a friend and he said, I know a guy that needs a Jellyfish, which is our shared storage media solution for his mm-hmm. upcoming project, which was the Ryder Cup. It's a guy named Brandon who's got a company called Carved Films, and they were doing all the content for the Ryder Cup for the PGA of America. And they had previously worked on what we talked about, sort of a number of SSDs and uploading to Google Drive. And they wanted a better, more streamlined solution. So we have the Jellyfish Nomad, which is the beginning of our shared storage solutions. And it's a portable little briefcase sized powerhouse of a video editing server. And you can get 6 editors direct connect to it. And they had cameras coming in. They had 12 cameras coming in from the Ryder Cup all weekend, dumping footage, turning around social edits, and getting 6 people working on the same media at the same time to really improve the workflow. And I think that sort of goes back to what we try to do at OWC, is get technology to be out of the way and let the creatives, you know, sort of rip and make cool stuff really fast. And that was a cool little success story. I'm talking with him next week to sort of debrief and get a little video case study. So keep an eye out for that. But it's fun for me because I'm a golfer, and also just making content is so important these days for every institution. So to make it easier is a win for us.
Yeah. Nice. And the other question that we usually ask, is kind of two parts, is like, what do you do to kind of get away from the creative and kind of reset? And I mean, I guess you just said it in the last question, is like, is golfing one of those hobbies that you love to do, or are there other hobbies that you like to not just capture, but actually participate in?
Golf is the one for me. And it's funny. It's the one thing where like, I try to bring my camera out and I wind up sort of not taking any pictures, and I actually put my phone in my bag, and it's like those 3-4 hours, whatever it is. It's like, that's just my turn off time. So I try so hard. Like, I want to make golf content, and every time I go out to do it, I'm like, I just want to play golf. So it's a good turn off and a reset.
Nice. Love it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.